Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
Another day, another big thought, another dollar. This is John. How are you? We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Wish you were here.
Lord have mercy.
Or you could just listen in the comfort of your own home, place of employment, convalescence, work or school, or automobile. Either way, my phone number to text or call is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. To join us along the way, there are some texts actually you've been sending me of late I've been neglecting. I'll plow through some of them today. I always appreciate your feedback and comment. We'd love for you to attend our Thomas Jefferson and Meriwether Lewis shows. I have this habit, you know, of talking to presidents on stage. Jefferson, Roosevelt, Meriwether Lewis, of course, wasn't a president, but he was maybe our greatest explorer. He was the John Glenn or Neil Armstrong of the 18th century and early 19th century. I mean, you think they set out from St. Louis, the Lewis and Clark Expedition. I'll just give you a second on this. And headed north and west, traveled 8,000 miles on their own backs over 28 months, 2 years and 4 months. And they didn't have so much as a flashlight. They did not have cable or GPS. In fact, they did not know what they would see, except probably hostile Indians and maybe mastodons. They didn't know if there weren't dinosaurs on the Great West. Their hope was that they would find a waterway to get all the way to the Pacific Ocean. They did not. And one of the proudest things of that expedition when they got back was that they all survived. I think one person died from a disease, but nobody was killed by an Indian. Nobody was killed by each other. Nobody was killed by the conditions. You go sleep outside on your own with no electricity in North Dakota some winter and see if you can survive that. They did. They ate their dogs along the way. I mean, I'm just reading about some of the travails that they went through. This is interesting, though. So they're out for 28 months. Thomas Jefferson is going to join us on stage for one show. I'll talk to Jefferson on stage, and then we'll do a second show on December 2nd at Elgin Community College afterwards. Then the second show will be with Meriwether Lewis. So Jefferson sends Meriwether Lewis. You can see either show. You can see them both. Jefferson sends Meriwether Lewis out with Clark and about 30 other guys. He says, when you get about halfway, send a couple of them back and let me know how it's going, because they didn't have the internet. And they got to that point where they said, okay, now two of you are supposed to go back and tell the president how things are going. And Meriwether Lewis decides, you know what? We need every able body here. We're getting thinner, and I do not want to diminish our ranks of 30 by 2. So you're going to stay, and the president and the rest of the world will just have to wait for word from us. And they never got word then for 2+ years. And people back in Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia and St. Louis thought they'd all died. And rumors were rampant that they had been eaten or attacked or self-sabotaged, but that they had all perished. And then here they come 2+ years later down the river, and people go, hokey smokes, it's Lewis and Clark and these guys. So they finally get to a place where they can get some news into a town. And the very first thing they say, the first question that Lewis and Clark have is, who's the president? Because if Jefferson was no longer president, that would be bad for them. Jefferson sent them out. He's their guy. They're his guy. So it would really be good if Jefferson was president. But they didn't know. They didn't know who the president was. And they sure didn't have any personal information, but they wanted to know big picture. Like, who is the president? Are we at war? Who won the World Series? What's a World Series? All big questions for them. So they came back and had that. And the story of what happened in between is just so much fun and so remarkable. And the way our Meriwether Lewis character tells it, so funny at points. So we'll do that on stage. Now, you should go to these shows, particularly the Lewis one if you haven't seen it. But if you want to hear what Thomas Jefferson thinks about life in America these days, then get tickets to that show too. All of the details and ticket prices and ordering information are at WGNradio.com/events. Again, this is at the Elgin Community College on December 2nd. It's a Saturday at what they call their Blizzard Theater. Speaking of things on stage, this is a story about the Super Bowl this year. Steve Bertrand, I'm really kind of proud of you this afternoon. Headline, Justin Timberlake, who's now going to do the Super Bowl show at halftime this year, owes Janet Jackson an apology. Maeve McDermott wrote this in the USA Today today. Justin Timberlake needs to apologize to Janet Jackson. He should start now with news that he'll perform at the 2018 halftime show. He should do so as publicly as possible, and at the very least, he should invite her on stage to perform a song or 10. Who yesterday said Janet Jackson should make an appearance on the stage at the Super Bowl?
She'll be there.
One Steve Bertrand. Do we know that for a fact, or that's just your expectation?
That's my prediction.
Yeah. And I, you know, everybody's sort of on pins and needles these days about a variety of things, including appropriate and inappropriate behavior.
It would sort of cross the theme, wouldn't it?
Well, it literally plays off of it. I think, particularly in the era that we live in now, which, by the way, I think it's just literally more advanced, we can handle the notion that the two of them will be on stage. And if they want to dance around a little bit, and then everybody would be glued to the sets. Oh, my God, just don't touch her. Don't even go near her. Don't go. But respect her comfort zone. Respect her zone, her privacy place, whatever. It would be fun to watch. You know, he's just a mega star. He does everything right. I'm not sure how, you know, resonant her talents are these days. Do people want to hear her sing and dance anymore? I don't know. I haven't heard from Janet in a while. But I think it would be fun. And the point of this story is that not only would it be great if she was up there, but she suffered, her career took a left turn as a result of that, and his sure did not. There is this Ask Amy Dickinson column in yesterday's Chicago Tribune. It says, Dear Amy, what's your reaction to this? I am not from India, but I had a traditional Indian shirt called a kurta made when I was invited to an Indian wedding. The shirt is made of Indian silk with gold embellishments. Would it be appropriate to wear this shirt to a Halloween gathering at my office? I know that there are some people from India working in the same building. Signed, a colleague. She wrote, all right, Steve Bertrand, yes or no, inappropriate. Hey, I'm an Indian guy. Or, I don't know, I'm just wearing Indian clothing. What do you think? Appropriate or inappropriate or neutral? It's.
I would say neutral depending on what you did with the rest of your face and stuff.
Do you fake an accent and go around saying, I'll have the chicken, that sort of thing? That would be inappropriate.
Do it some more. I'm not sure. Give me
some more. I want that back. So Ask Amy says, Dear colleague, no, this would not be appropriate. It would be appropriation. Cultural appropriation is when you take something that has cultural meaning or significance for someone else and you use it for your own purposes. You choosing to wear this beautiful shirt as a Halloween costume would be or could be quite offensive. And then she wrote, I think anybody wondering how to dress for an office-related Halloween gathering should just pick a character from the TV show The Office and go with that. But in Teen Vogue, they have a story today.
So you could wear the Indian shirt around every day, right?
Yes, you could.
But if you start to wear it as a costume,
yes, you could.
Then it becomes offensive.
I think you're right.
I kind of get what she's saying.
Listen, nothing is easy anymore. Only yesterday and then again about a few days before yesterday did I discover that it is inappropriate to demean somebody with the word sissy. You're not supposed to call someone a sissy. We'll get to that in a minute. But, I mean, you know how you've learned that there's certain religions and ethnic groups and gender associations and all these. The list grows every day. And now sissy is on the list. And if you say, oh, I didn't know that. Well, now you know it. And now you're going to be judged by your use of that.
John,
I'm just warning you.
Most people knew that.
I do not. This guy did not. This guy did not know that saying to a guy as a playful insult, oh, you're such a sissy. I had no idea that that was inappropriate.
So let me rephrase. I would say everyone but you.
7 billion people on Earth.
Right.
6.9999999 billion of them knew.
You found your niche.
So, a la Kathy and Judy's old funny, not funny, we're now going to play appropriate, not appropriate. These are costumes that are trending for this Halloween. And the question is, not just because of who's president or Harvey Weinstein or all of the sorts of sensitivity issues that have been raised of late, but maybe just because of the ongoing cultural biases, we need to sort of pay attention to some of these things. So appropriate, not appropriate, true Halloween costumes coming up. Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, is in our Allstate Showcase studio. Hi, Phil. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I asked you to give us some suggestions on places to eat for Thanksgiving. Some of us like to go out on the holiday.
More and more people go out on the holiday.
Do you eat in or out on Thanksgiving?
Always eat in.
Do you cook the food at your place? What's your deal?
We go about half and half. My wife kind of likes to take over the turkey. Last year, we got kind of experimental because it was just her and me and one of my two sons was in town. So just dinner for three. So I got a boneless turkey breast, and I cooked that sous vide. So I cooked that separately, which is, you know, the warm water circulating bath kind of thing that doesn't let anything dry out, which is really nice for turkey breast. And then I roasted turkey thighs in the oven.
Oh, nice.
I sort of recombined it. So I never actually started with an entire bird,
right,
but I sort of took bird parts and cooked
them
separately.
How did that go for you?
It worked out okay. The sous vide was just about perfect. That came out great. I'm going to have to adjust the temperature on the roasted thighs this time around.
You dried the thighs out
a little bit.
And then what do you do for stuffing?
We skipped it this year.
Oh my God! Well, then you know, then you missed Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
you actually
much.
Don't get credit for it if you don't.
Well,
have Thanksgiving.
Well, we ate too much and drank too much and watched football, so I think we hit it.
Yeah, those are three of the big four. That's for sure. Okay, so I asked you though, for those of us who like to go out, I told you on maybe off the air that my family and I for years have been going to Lowry's. Everybody gets dressed up. They do the carving station or on wheels that they come by. And it's just a nice family tradition for us. Some of us get turkey. Some of us get prime rib. You can get a combo.
Sure.
And a dollop of potatoes and some stuffing. They do the spinning salads still, as you well know. So that's a big day for us. Where would you suggest, if I was going to go into the city or suburbs, would somebody eat out on Thanksgiving?
I don't think so. But there are a couple of fun places. Start in the suburbs. One restaurant that's been doing it for so long is Prairie Grass Cafe up in Northbrook. That is Sarah Stegner, and she used to be the executive chef at the Ritz-Carlton Dining Room when there was a Ritz-Carlton Dining Room. And she has her own, not just her place, but she's been up there for years. And they do a lovely multi-course Thanksgiving dinner. And they don't go late, so they tend to be like the last reservation, I think, is around like 8 o'clock or something like that.
8 in the evening.
Early,
yeah,
the
but
last one.
Nobody's eating at 10 o'clock, huh?
No, and even then, I think they, you know, it's more of an early crowd anyhow. And she has those great pies that she makes for her mom's recipe.
And which place is this? This is,
this is Prairie Grass Cafe. In Northbrook.
On Skokie, yeah. Okay, give me another one.
Here's another one. It's sort of in the Lowry's Prime Rib thing where you take a place principally known for beef. RPM Steak is doing a four-course turkey feast. I mean, it's $85, so it's, you know, keeping in what you would spend at RPM Steak anyway. But I'm sure that's going to be pretty epic.
Yeah, no
that's
kidding.
That's going to be a big thing. A new restaurant that's never done Thanksgiving before on account of not being open before is City Mouse, which is in the Ace Hotel on out in Fulton Market District, 311 North Morgan Street. They're doing a three-course menu for $55. It's $21 for kids, and you know that's a solid operation as well. We talked off the mic about Mighty Nice Cafe, which has been doing Mighty Nice Bar and Grill. I keep thinking cafe. They've been doing Thanksgiving forever, and very very reliable. And then for people who want to really watch in the budget and all the rest of it, Ann Sather's, always reliable.
I was there the other day,
you
know, for breakfast in one of those damn cinnamon rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm going to be better than this cinnamon roll. I'm not going to eat that much of the cinnamon roll.
I ate
about every bite of the damn thing. They do. Yeah. You know, I have this theory about cinnamon rolls. Thanks for asking. And it goes a little like this, that the prettier the cinnamon roll or, say, restaurant cookie is, the worse it is. All of that stuff, and then you try and go, it doesn't look nearly as good. It doesn't taste nearly as good as it looks. Mm-hmm. Those rolls look good, and they are good.
Yep.
They've figured that out, the Ann Sather stuff. Yeah. Okay, so there's that list. And I don't know, do you mind if I post the list that you generated for me?
Be my guest. And on our webpage. Check back at ChicagoTribune.com, because I'm pretty sure we'll have a bigger list available in a week or so.
Yeah. In the Tribune today, there is this story, Publican chef Cosmo Goss fired. You mentioned Publican to us not that long ago. I don't remember exactly the context. Maybe that it's going to be part of the Wrigley complex.
The Publican people are going to be part of there.
The Ricketts are doing so much amazing, great work over there. And your colleague at the Tribune, Joseph Hernandez, said Cosmo Goss, executive chef of 5 Publican brand businesses, has been fired by parent company One Off Hospitality months after an incident that violated a member's privacy and respect. Evidently, there was some sort of a picture that was shared by members of the staff, and it came evidently to Goss first. He did not fire the person that shared it with him, and other people saw it. And so when they recently found out about that, they had their own investigation, and they fired Cosmo Goss. What do you know about or make of all of that?
Well, I think this... some of this stuff is a long time coming, and we're going to see a lot of this in the coming months. As
a lot of what?
A lot of accusations of sexual harassment.
Where?
In the workplace, particularly in the restaurant workplace.
Not just that group, but throughout.
No, in fact, it's important to note that the chef was, the executive chef was fired, not for participating in this. In the sharing of the picture or anything, but by failing to report once it had started, and so in a company like One Off, where you have levels of responsibility and an absolute responsibility for the people at the top to know when something like this is going around, then action has to be taken.
Do you have a feel for what it's like in the restaurant industry? 100 people signed an open letter in Springfield about what's going on at the legislature and has for years. Obviously, we're all talking about the entertainment industry these days. I presume the restaurant business is not immune to this either, huh?
No, I wouldn't think so. It's for many years, and we might argue even still today, it's a male-dominated industry. And when men have power, men have a bad habit of misusing that power.
Well, and think about it. It's late at night. It's alcohol. It's single people sometimes not. A lot of times younger and attractive people. I mean, it's sort of a perfect storm. Nothing excuses or even... should provide for bad behavior. But if you wanted to go hunting for an environment where it might crop up, this would be one.
Right. It's an environment where bad behavior can occur. I mean, substance abuse has been a big problem in the restaurant industry forever. And this is a problem that doesn't get spoken of very often.
So do you have something in mind, though, when you say you don't think we've heard the last of this? Are you
anything particular? No. I just know that now that there is, there is more safety in numbers. Now there's less of a fear of being stigmatized if you're the lone voice coming out. We're going to hear from more voices.
That's a good thing and a bad thing, isn't it? That people all of a sudden, or maybe we've just for some reason tipped and it's been long coming, but people feel a little more comfortable or a little more empowered to tell the truth.
Absolutely.
About abuse they would. And I guess that's a shame that they've had to wait this long, but if it's happening, it should be spoken about.
Right, exactly. And it may feel like an avalanche at first, but in addition to shining a light on this issue, and accusing people who have behaved very badly, this is also an effort to change a culture.
Oh.
And that's not going to happen with 2 or 3 incidents and a couple of bad boys go away and we say, cluck, 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 good thing that would never happen here.
I think there's a lot of people listening to this who work or who have worked in the restaurant business, and they go, oh, if you knew the half of it, John,
right.
The stuff that goes on to this day in that workplace.
Exactly.
Let's pause for just a second. You weren't able to join us last week. You had a nice review in the paper, though. I wanted
Thank
to
you.
Ask you about that. The restaurant was not Osteria. It was, give me the name, Nico Osteria. Yeah, Nico Osteria. Phil Vitello in our studio. He is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. And let's just pick up real quick on the review you wrote for Nico Osteria in last week's paper, but you weren't able to join us. Just give me the headline on this. Where is it? What do you like about it? What kind of restaurant is it?
It's been around for quite a few years. The original chef was Erling Wubauer. It's part of the One-Off Hospitality Group. It's their restaurant, their only restaurant in the Gold Coast area, and it's seafood, Italian seafood focused. And what they do better, I think, than anything is great, is bring in superb quality product, and then they don't fuss with it too much. You know, they let the pristine nature of the fish shine through. And I don't mean to say they're not doing their job as,
right.
as chefs, but the current chef, the new chef, is was at Le Bernardin in New York, which is far and wide considered the finest or one of the finest seafood restaurants in the nation. And so he comes with a glittering resume, and he just has a way with seafood. He makes these crudo plates, excuse me, and every item is dressed just so. I mean, he just seems to know how to accent a fish and still make it seem very, very clean and like nothing is being manipulated on it whatsoever. And yet there's an awful lot of technique that you don't even notice.
You go to this place, Nico Osteria, for fish. Is that the recommendation?
That's
there?
The recommendation. Yeah, it's fish first and foremost. And everything else is a bargain. Nice pastas. No complaint about any of the pastas. But you go there for the fish. You don't go.
It's on Rush Street, and you give it three stars out of four. You say large plates are $17 to $42. So that's slightly expensive, but not too.
No, he said his goal is to have that range of prices so that I could say I could just walk in, sit at the bar, have a fish entree and a glass of wine, and still be out of there for under $40. Or I could go the whole big fancy route and spend considerably more.
By the way, congratulations to Smith. Which gets what is it? 2 stars from Michelin.
It moved
right?
up from 1 star to 2 star this year in the Michelin Star Awards, which were announced late last week.
And 25 Chicago restaurants noted as well. 24. Is that pretty good for us? Is that
it's one off our all time high, which was last year. And considering that of last year's crop, 2 restaurants actually closed. That's not bad at all.
Read Phil Vitello online at chicagotribune.com/dining. You can also read him in the print edition. They actually put this information in paper.
Yeah, it's the latest thing. You don't have to.
They'll leave it right on your door.
Yeah, if the battery goes dead, you can still you can still read the news because we put it in paper form. Nice. I think it's going to catch on.
Nice to see you, Phil. Thanks for coming in.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Hey, I got one.
Here's John Williams.
It's a really big one. This will require some math. It's 207 on WGN. I'm John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And we really appreciate you tuning in. Anytime along the way you want to ask a question or comment, you can text or call 312-981-7200. Here we go now. Follow me on the Twitter. I'm WGN King John on Twitter, WGN King John on Twitter. Just a quick aside before we get back to the conversation we had yesterday about the hashtag MeToo movement and something said here that made you crazy. First, did you see that Albert Einstein's theory on happiness given as a little slip of paper to a waiter or a bellboy or somebody? Has fetched $1.3 million.
Yeah, I think it was money well spent. I'm going to read it every day when I wake up. I have it right there on my bedstand.
Do you have it? I've got it in front of me. You want me to read you what his theory on happiness is?
Well, I mean, I'd rather you didn't give it away. I just paid $1.3 for it.
Oh, that's you that bought it, huh?
What is it?
Well, go ahead, Steve. Give me your... In fact, this is what I did. I says, well, tell me what your theory or equation for happiness is, and some sort of geeks and wonks out there are doing it. They're chiming in with their theory their formula for happiness.
Make millions of dollars and then you can say money doesn't really matter.
Einstein's theory fetches $1.3 million. He said on a note to a young person, a calm and modest life brings more happiness than the pursuit of success combined with constant restlessness. A calm and modest life, there's your recipe for happiness, brings more happiness than the pursuit of success combined with constant restlessness. We're all running around chasing a buck, trying to have a nicer life, have cooler jeans, get your kids into a better school, have whiter teeth, blah, blah, blah. If we were just calm and modest, life would be much easier.
Didn't expect much, didn't have to have those shoes.
There's so much truth to that.
Oh, absolutely.
I, however, as a person who cannot seem to get off the treadmill, and maybe that's my problem, I'm justifying it all. But I think that when people say, well, just be happy. You know, if you've got your health, you've got everything. Well, I'd be happier and I'd have better health if I had more money. That's why I'm on the treadmill, damn it. And I think it's easy to sort of I think if you went to a lot of people who don't have much money, but they seem to be calm and modest, if you said, hey, you want to go to Lowry's? They would say, okay, oh, wait, I can't, I don't have the money. So a little bit more money does go, I think, a long way to making people happier.
But there is a study where it starts to diminish.
Diminish, right. And right. And I don't know that, do you know where where the number is? Hold on. Aleph, what's the point of diminishing returns for money relative to happiness? Will you look that up for us?
I want to say it's pretty low. It's in the 70s.
I was going to say, I thought it was, yeah, probably right. Around there. That after the 75,000th dollar.
Right.
That the next one, you're not really getting that much more bang for the buck.
I like to count my blessings every day, and if I had too many blessings, I'd never get anything else done. So I think it's kind of good that I have just a few.
Well, then you are blessed, aren't you?
It's a modest expectation.
You know, my friend Thomas Jefferson said, take life by the smooth handle. Think about that. Take life by the smooth handle. Do that, and you will know happiness. I came up with a formula. Mine is H equals F over dollar bill sign times work times time. And now I don't know why I did that. I'm not exactly, I have to now think if that even makes mathematical sense. If that generates a higher number or a lower number, depending on the value of the variables, I don't even know now. But it looks good in writing. And then some of you did come up with some true mathematical equations. And a lot of you are including something in there that I forgot to include in mine. So I will be amending my happiness formula. I didn't include kids. I didn't include kids.
Oh, well, we thought you considered it. And
yeah, that's the unknown known. If you have kids, you know they are the source of your life's greatest happinesses, and they're the source of your life's greatest frustrations, and maybe even sadnesses. If you don't have children, you don't have either the high or the low. So what would be a better life? I hate to get philosophical on you. This wasn't my point here. But would you be happier with or without kids? You know? I mean, I'll tell you what. There's a lot of us who have friends who seem to be having a lot more fun. Hey, we're in Vail. Hey, want to go to wine country? And you go, no, we're paying off a college loan. Yeah, we have kids. We just don't seem to be able to have as... No, I can't golf right now. I'm driving a Pinto, damn it. I've got bills to pay. I don't have an answer for you on that. But based on my life's experience, yeah, I would have to say that as the children have increased in my life, nieces and nephews too, so too has the happiness. So I'm going to... But by the way, those kids, they cost money. I think you got to have money to be happy. Speaking of money, Steve... This is a perfect example of news and fake news. No, not news and fake news, of alternative facts. I don't know what fake news is. I do know what alternative facts are. The lottery put out a press release, and it says Mega Millions enhanced, starting jackpots increase to $40 million. Bigger average jackpots, more millionaires. Well, that sounds like an improvement. Mega Millions enhanced... Starting jackpots increase to $40 million. Bigger average jackpots, more millionaires.
Okay.
That's all true. Every word of that is true, yes, because...
It made it easier to win?
No, they did not. But they
How can there be more millionaires?
Because the second prize is $1 million, and they have tweaked it so that the way they do the numbers, they will have more $1 million winners. You'll have more second prizes. But because they've increased the total number of ping pong balls to 70, you're going to have fewer overall winners. Wait, more people hitting five of the numbers, but fewer people hitting all seven of the numbers, or all six of the numbers. I don't think I've helped here. So anyway, it says here, starting jackpots increased to $40 million. That's the starting jackpot. Bigger average jackpots, because it's going to roll over. We're going to have fewer winners. So it's going to go from 40 to 80 to 100, just like that. And they're going to have more millionaires, because when you're playing for those first five balls, if you'll pardon the expression, that is like, how many balls do you play for on that? It's like, I think it's still 40. So if you get five of those 40 or whatever, then you become a millionaire. But they've added up to 70 numbers. So you have the mega ball number, which is like from 1 to 25 or something like that. There's more of those mega ball options. So more often than not, we're not going to have somebody with all of the numbers. I know I'm making this crystal clear.
It just like makes me want to go out and play.
I bet it doesn't.
Can I tell you, I have kind of stopped. And I buy lottery tickets, you know, when I'm in the gas station or something. Yeah. I have kind of stopped buying the Mega Million or the Powerball.
It's the only kind I buy. What do you buy?
I'm buying the lotto, because I come to realize I really don't want all that money.
Oh, yeah, sure you do.
No, I don't.
So what do you win if you win the lotto?
10. I'll take 10, 15.
10 million? Or $15 million,
that's,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you get up to like $200 million or
something. Yeah, I'm in. That's when I get on the bus.
Odds are better with the lotto.
Yeah.
So
they just got worse. They've got worse.
No,
now.
The lotto. You're talking about Mega Millions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Mega Millions is now, the odds are worse. They've gone from 258 million to 302 million to one.
And they're charging more, right?
Yeah, it's $2 instead of one. There's also a $3 ticket. I don't want to get into that, but so here's the point. The lottery says this: Mega Millions enhanced, starting jackpots increased to 40 million, bigger average jackpots, more millionaires. All true. CNN.money.com says Mega Millions, more expensive to enter, harder to win. Also true. This, whether Kellyanne Conway knows it or not, is a perfect example of alternative facts. You just represented it in a positive way, and everything you said was true. I just represented it in a negative way, and everything I just said is true. These are alternative facts. It doesn't make it a lie.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think when she was using alternative facts, so her facts weren't facts.
Maybe so, I know what she was trying. My recollection of it was, and maybe whoever's right on this isn't important.
No.
Because my recollection of it was that she was just saying something else, which was also true about whatever the hell it was that day, and everybody else was busting her on something else. And she says, well, we have alternative facts, facts that make it look better than you just presented it. This is what you have with the lottery. So while it's going to be more expensive to enter, it's gone from a buck to two. It's going to be harder to win. The chances are now over 300 million to one. It is also true, they remind you, that the average jackpot is going to be bigger. You'll have more millionaires. And the first jackpot will be 40 million. You can't win less. So there's that. Should I read this on the radio station here, WGN? Basing their study on 40, 50,000 respondents. What did you just hand me here? Oh, here's the diminishing returns point. Hey, Steve, Elif did find what the dollar amount is for diminishing returns.
She's good.
Based their study on 450,000 survey responses from Gallup and Healthways, Deaton and Kahneman found that the higher the respondents' incomes, the higher the incomes.
Just skip ahead to a number.
I know. It's held true only up to annual income of $75,000.
You
nailed it. You had it exact. $75,000. After that, you're going to work real hard to get that $76,000, and you're not going to be as happy as you were when you increased it from 74 to 75. How about that? Nicely done, Elif. It's a 218. Okay. Oh, I have to pause. When we come back, I just want to go back to the conversation yesterday we had about the hashtag MeToo movement. There was a woman whose essay, she's a TV producer in Canada, appeared on CNN. And in that, she said, in this essay, here's things that guys should know. Don't call her sweetie. This is about how we treat women, how we respect women, how we do and do not defer to them. So he said, for instance, she said, when you introduce somebody, do not say, and here's the lovely Elif Garris. And then Elif comes up and she's a beautiful young woman and she stands up there and she gives the speech. Why are you calling attention to the person's appearance? We do that to women. We don't do it to men. At conferences, male doctors are introduced as Dr. Bertrand. Female doctors, less than half the time, are introduced as Dr. Garris. They're introduced as Mrs. or something else, but they don't put the appellation doctor in front of the name. But we do it for men, but we don't do it for women. And there are these sorts of things that happen all the time. The point of that is to simply say, don't describe their appearance, even if you mean it as a compliment. And there's a couple things specifically on her list, which I thought kind of made sense, but were challenging to people of a certain age or gender. The people stopped me afterwards and they said, I wanted to punch the dashboard. Let me get to those and get your reaction to those in a minute. You watched the Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers last night. We're going to be terrible this year, I understand, but son of a gun. We gave Cleveland a game for 3.5 quarters. That last half of the last quarter, not so much. There was a point in time where we were playing really well last night, and then we could not get the ball down the floor. We were throwing it away. We were missing shots. We were taking bad shots. You could see a mile away the steals coming for Cleveland. There's those teams that just lay and wait. They'll let you play. They'll let you play. And then they'll go, okay, now we're going to win. And then LeBron James or Carmelo Anthony or somebody who's just one of these guys in the NBA who can take control of a game whenever they want to do. But for 3.5 quarters, we were competitive and sometimes winning by 8, 10, 12, 14 points, something like that. And this Lauri Markkanen, I got hope for him. He's got to put on some weight, but he's going to be a shooter and he's going to be a player. He's going to be like a Kevin Love, who was on the floor last night. Okay, so the hashtag MeToo movement. Steve, you were listening when we were talking about that right yesterday.
Yeah,
what decent
yeah.
men can do. A couple of people came up to me afterward and they go, that lady you had on. I thought, yeah, she was really good. They go, she made me nuts. Oh. She said in her essay, don't focus on little girls' looks. This is what men can do to change the culture. Don't focus on little girls' looks. She wrote, many people's first interaction with a young girl is to compliment her cuteness, prettiness, or clothing. But this tells her and boys nearby that beauty is her most interesting trait. Instead, ask little girls engaging gender-neutral questions like, hey, what kind of toy is that? What subjects do you like in school? What's your favorite animal? What are you reading? There are so many things to talk about. And I think that's a real challenge for a lot of people.
There was a statistic. I know Elif hates when I start with that sentence.
Elif, find a statistic of the thing he's about to say.
But that the first, and I don't know how to term the thought, but the first time that a girl, a young girl, tends to recognize herself as a sexual being is years earlier than a boy.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll absolutely bet.
And that has to do with what she's seeing on TV and the way people talk and things like that.
Well, when you see a little boy, you're probably not inclined to say, oh, what an adorable outfit, or aren't you pretty or cute?
Look at you, handsome man. I mean, I think we do.
Do you say that?
I think we do more than you think.
Maybe so. She also wrote this, give extra space after dark. Are you cognizant of this when you're walking behind a female who's by herself in the evening? She says, if a woman is walking alone at night or in a secluded area, please recognize she's probably nervous. If you're walking behind her, slow down to increase the distance between you. And if you want to pass her, cross the street before you speed up and then cross back over. Go around her on the other side.
See, I refuse to act as if I'm suspect just because I'm a man.
That's all about you. That is nothing about her. That's nothing about her. I know you aren't a bad guy. She doesn't know that.
But simply because I'm a man doesn't mean I should behave as if I'm suspect. And so I have an issue. So I don't think I would cross the road to worry about someone who may or may not be concerned about me because of something I'm not.
Maybe it would be nice for you to pass her without any incident, and that would help
embolden her, or
fear. Familiarize herself, right. make it easier for her.
I mean, I don't want to. I'm not going to act like a criminal because other people who have my same organs are.
I understand that, Steve, but I'll stick with my first point. I don't mind accommodating that person that way. This is less challenging for me than maybe not commenting on the adorableness of a small child. I have no trouble giving that person some distance. I'm cognizant when I get in an elevator now and there's only one other person in there and it's female, not to stand too close.
Well, would you ever? I mean, I would never do that.
On her list is give them extra space. And I've just been counseled before that there are times where you shouldn't get in an elevator with another single female because maybe they're uncomfortable with that.
Okay, so you tend to get me worked up here. So you're saying the advice is not to even ride an elevator because you're a man, because there's only one woman in there?
I have heard that before.
Well, that's too bad, because that is treating an entire gender criminally.
How about this one? Teach your elders to do better. She wrote, an old-fashioned sexist or racist comment might seem harmless from a beloved elder relative at a family gathering, but as people enter the healthcare system, they are largely going to be cared for by women and people of color who do not deserve dehumanizing treatment. I never thought about it that way, but we all know an older person who you just go, oh, boy, what are we going to do? You want to fight that fight or no, they're real old. They're the greatest generation. We're not going to, just let them have it. Just let them be. Or do you try and correct them and fix that? Her advice is teach your elders to do better. I'm like, okay, you cook Thanksgiving dinner because we're all going to be sitting at a long table and everyone will have had some red wine. And do you want to do that? Do you want? I'm just saying these are the challenges that she puts before you and me. And she said, Steve, don't be dismissive or argumentative, comma, Steve.
Okay, fine.
During conversations about types of oppression that you do not personally experience, keep an eye open for our culture's gross habit of putting the onus on oppressed persons to dredge up their pain for our inspection, which is kind of exactly what you were just doing.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it is, John. I mean, I think I'm more empathetic than most people.
You're a very sensitive person.
Right.
You're a very empathetic person.
But look, it's wrong to treat all women one way. And so it should also be considered that perhaps it's wrong to consider all men.
I think your premise is wrong. No, I think it's correct to treat all women the same way. A single female, you do not know what baggage she carries or what fears she has.
Maybe I didn't say that well. But I don't think you can treat all women based on your experience with one woman. I don't know, John. I just think that's a dangerous road. I don't want to raise my son as a suspect.
Okay, but all right. Would you open the door for any and
every... You're doing this on purpose.
Would you open the door for any and every female because she's female? Little chivalry?
I would tend to, but I would hold the door for... at my health club, when I arrive, I hold the door if there's a man coming in, too. Well, I do.
I know that, but I don't know that chivalry is the word that I'm after either here. But maybe this is me being old school. She's the one that told me to say this stuff. I think there are times where you should appreciate that their life's experiences are different than
Absolutely.
Yours because they are female.
Absolutely. Okay. I totally agree with that.
It doesn't sound like it. So now when you're walking upon the woman on a street.
Well, there's two ways. You could do it. You could do it this way. You could say, I'm sensitive to that. I don't have your experiences, and I know you might be concerned. And so because of that, I will be careful in the way I speak to you, and I will be very sensitive to.
Yeah.
But what those recommendations are just about being. So because I am a man being on your block, I will walk around the other way. That's not the way that's asking me to behave in a completely different way than normal. Because you might be concerned because someone else talked to you one way. I'm going to cross the street and...
I don't know why you're so defensive about that.
I don't know. I don't like being blamed for something I
prejudged.
Didn't do. Yeah.
By the way, Elif has, I believe it appears now, the age at which young girls versus young boys sort of recognize them as sexual beings.
She's better than Siri.
According...
Oh, wait, hold on. Elif, at what age does the thing that Steve said happen?
According to an American study in 2012, self-sexualization was common among 6 to 9 year old girls.
6 to 9. Does it have the age for boys in there?
Let me check on that. What does she say?
I think that works. I'll check on that. Or
let me look. Okay. Looking.
6 to 9 is the answer. It's 2:32. The news is coming up. It's Halloween. We get to listen to that during the news and then share just a little piece of it with you in and out of the news sometimes. Some folks are calling and texting about the conversation we've been having about the way that men and women address each other these days. Some of this is good. Some of this evidently is not. Let's just take a couple of them real quick here, and then I want to move on. Hey, you know, yesterday, Stephen, we were talking about the Bruce Rauner ad with Mike Madigan's spokesperson.
Right.
Dave Brown.
Steve Brown.
Steve Brown. Steve's a nice guy. I think he has a very difficult job. I think he's the Sean Spicer. Of Illinois politics, which is not fair to Mr. Brown because Spicer was Spicer.
Spicer was clearly caught lying several times.
My point is that they both have jobs that are difficult because of who their boss is. Having to speak for either of them is not an easy thing to do. Right? Right. So, anyway, thank you very much, Olive. So why was I talking about him just now?
Because yesterday our conversation about the governor's ads.
Yeah, right. I didn't do a very good job setting it up because as I was getting into it, I thought, no, wait, this can't be an ad for Rauner because it's all of these other Republican governors saying how screwed up Illinois is, and he's another Republican governor. So it would make you think, wow, what's the odd man out? It's our Republican governor.
Right, but their language was all thanking Mike Madigan and the Democrats.
Okay, fair enough. We'll just get back to that in a minute. It's 2:42. Let's pick up a couple. You know what's the problem here, too? The glare of the sun comes in right about now, and it makes it impossible. Do you know what I'm going through?
Yeah, I do, because I raised 6 years olds, and it looks like after lunch you need a little nap or something. You're getting distracted easily.
I came that way.
Moving all different directions here.
On line one, we'll start with James. You're on WGN. James, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I'm going to be real brief so you can get all the callers. First of all, I'm going to have to come to the defense of Steve and say that he's not being overly sensitive about the idea of crossing the street. Reason why is this, as I told your producer.
If a woman is walking down the street, is it wrong for a guy to walk too closely to her because she's fearful about what might be coming up from behind? Go ahead.
Okay, why would he have to cross the street? Let's put it in a couple of scenarios. Scenario number one, and let's see if it was an African-American man walking behind her. Would he have to do the same thing to do that?
Well, if he's a guy,
put a different way, that if someone came to you, John, and said, "Yeah, when I'm walking down the street and I'm coming upon a black guy, I always cross the street," the answer would be, "Well, you can't treat every person that in a similar way, right?"
Exactly. And
that's your point. That's what you're trying to tell me here. I think those are grossly different things, but go ahead.
No, and I disagree because basically you're stereotyping the fact of somebody walking behind. What happens if a guy had a leather jacket with tattoos? It's the same thing. Should he be cross the street, regardless of race?
No, but if you're coming upon a guy with tattoos or a person of color, you should not cross the street. You should pass them as you would anybody else, right? You should treat.
So why should a woman expect a regular guy walking down the street?
It's the perspective of this intersection we're talking about.
It is the same thing, John, because you're saying a racist, fearful white person, their perspective is defensible.
Don't do that. No. If you are imagining the scenario from the perspective of the person you're going to pass, if it's a female, you know she might be worried about who you are, so you defer to her. If it's a person of color, you know they don't want to see you walk away in fear, and so then you stay on the sidewalk. In each case, you imagine what their perspective is rather than yours.
I don't mean to take up your caller's time, but then by that scenario, if you are a black guy walking down the street upon a white person, you might say, well, they tend to be, I bet, afraid of black people, so I'm going to walk around so I don't scare them.
I think you're missing the point, and I think James is also missing the point. It's that it doesn't matter what race you are. It's the fact that you hear someone's feet scuffling behind you and you don't know who it is, but you also don't want to turn around because you don't want to look paranoid, and this is the world that we live in. You don't want to seem a certain way when you're nervous,
So if I was walking behind you, Elif, you would prefer that I cross the street rather than
you pass personally,
you.
Elif. What's your personal response
if
to that?
If it's late at night and if there's nobody else around, yes.
You want some distance.
I don't want you to be right behind me, Steve.
Well, I'm going to probably pass you.
You can pass by me, but...
No, you can't pass by Elif.
Prefer,
Elif is a very fast walker.
I am. No. But in all seriousness, though, especially when it's dark out and I'm walking from the grocery store back to my apartment, what am I going to do, Uber two blocks? Yeah, I get nervous
so
walking.
No. So there you are for those two or three blocks, feeling vulnerable the whole way if a man is approaching you from behind, right?
Yeah, because you don't know who they are, yeah. And I don't care what race you are.
All right, hold on a second. James, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Last comment from you, and then I got to go.
Well, the last comment I made is, once again, the point I'm trying to make is that regardless if it's black, white, leather jacket, or thug-looking or what, that person should not feel obligated on behalf of the woman that he doesn't want to scare the woman to cross the street. That's all I'm saying. I think that it's offensive to tell Steve that he needs to cross the street, any man. That's the point I'm making. And it's still going over everybody's heads.
I appreciate your phone call. Thanks for getting in here.
Have a good one.
Have a good day. Incidentally, Elif is a very fast walker. Elif is not a tall person. How tall are you, Elif? You're 5'4"?
Seven.
5'7"?
Whoa.
Well, you're thin.
Stop it.
I know. God, John, stop talking. Here's the point. We were walking to the U-Haul place the other day. Do you remember when you and I were walking the other day?
I do, yeah.
When we went to get your couch? And it was like, holy, do you realize how fast a walker you are? My family busts on me all the time because I walk really fast, and it just seems so laborious to slow to their pace. So now Elif and I are taking a stroll the other day, and I'm like, oh, my God, woman, I have a longer leg than you. I can't believe how fast we're going. I really had to work to keep up with you.
I don't realize that.
Do you get that reaction from other people? Do you know that you're
yes,
a fast walker?
I do, but I don't.
And it doesn't
realize.
Even look like an effort to you. It's like without trying to walk.
I was walking leisurely that day.
I know. And I was watching you going, how is she going so damn fast? I have longer legs and I'm a fast walker. It was a puzzle to me. Bertrand is probably a very fast walker because he's like a giant. He just boom, boom, boom.
I've stopped walking now.
It's 2:48. You know that Honor Flight thing? Are you a advocate, fan, or knowledgeable
sure,
about Honor Flight?
Yeah.
A buddy of mine is involved in that, and another friend wants to get involved in it, and I know this much about it. They've got a fundraiser coming up, and I think we should all do everything we can to keep that amazing and clever and helpful program alive. I'll give you a couple details on what they're going to do in town in a minute. Hey, Wendy.
Hello, John.
There you are. What's
Blair
going on?
Is bad, huh?
What's up, girl?
Listen, I never defend Bertrand here, but if you're walking down the street, you should be able to walk down the street and think of your own self. If a guy is walking up behind me, I'm kind of aware of my surroundings, and then I would cross the street. Why should he have to?
Okay, I guess that solves the problem.
That kind of is going to make me cry, Wendy. Thank you.
It's the first and only time, Bertrand.
So what about this text? Hey, John. How's a guy supposed to get a date these days? You can't talk to women. You can't compliment them. You can't approach them on the street. You can't pass them. You can't ride in elevators with them. Another texter. How am I supposed to meet a woman as a single guy in this town? This one says, hey, this topic is asinine. People need to use common sense. Everybody's too damn scared. But one last one, Wendy, a woman texted in and she said, as a woman, when I'm walking down a street, coming upon another woman in this situation, I cross over so that she won't be apprehensive about what's coming up behind her.
Well, it's gonna that's ridiculous.
It's going to lead to more pedestrians nice, hit by cars.
by the way, hey, Wendy, did you guys hear on the radio today that it is now illegal in Honolulu to go into an intersection while texting?
I did hear that.
Yeah. I don't know if we're going
to volunteer to arrest people. Let's move to Hawaii.
Oh, my God. I know it. I hate. Last thing we need is our city council to come up with more cockamamie laws. But this one is actually a good idea. If you can't text while driving, you shouldn't text while in an intersection. I think that's probably not so bad. Wendy Snyder with Bill Left tomorrow morning. We'll be listening to you at 10. Thank you, Wen.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let's see here. Hang up on her. And is Mary Pettinato on line 7? Hey, Mary, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you doing?
I'm terrific. You are the co-founder of Honor Flight Chicago. What does Honor Flight Chicago do?
On our flight, Chicago flies our World War II and our Korean War vets to Washington, D.C. for a day of honor and a way to say thanks for your service.
What do you do when you get them to Washington? What do you do in the Capitol?
We go to the World War II Memorial, the Korean, Lincoln, and Vietnam Memorial, the Air and Space Museum where the Enola Gay is, and other surprises along the way.
What is, you and I have talked about this, and I think people are generally familiar with this concept. I wonder what's most important to them. Is it being in those places, or is it the sort of respect that they're given just throughout the day? I wonder what the big moment for these men and women is when they go.
Great question. I really don't think it, in my mind, the trip is a conduit for the many different ways that we can say thanks. So when they get to the airport in the morning, they're expecting a free ticket, maybe a free breakfast, and instead they've got a free ticket and breakfast, but also the Andrews sisters singing the tunes of the 40s and the 50s.
Nice, yeah.
And then they get on the plane, and the pilot, you know, of course, banters with them. Most of the pilots are retired military. And all along the way, they're being thanked. They're being thanked by strangers in D.C. We have a crowd. We have a band. We have, you know, 250 people in D.C. greeting them when the plane lands. And at every memorial, their pictures are being taken. Strangers are walking up from France and from all over the world to say, may I get an autograph? May I thank you?
A friend of mine is a Korean veteran, and he started to tell me the story about it. He was on one of the flights not that long ago, and he broke down in tears as he was telling the story. And his wife had heard the story many times, and they were both in tears. The whole, now that you mention it, it was just the whole experience. And this is a guy who has had a nice life and has had plenty of accolades, and yet the honor flight brings him to tears just to talk about it.
Very true, and even more true with the Korean War vets. You know, we lost 36,000 lives in 38 months, and yet we didn't even call it a war for years. We called it a police action.
Yeah.
So when we get the opportunity to fly the Korean War vets, they're just bawling. They're so thankful to finally be honored.
You guys are doing a fundraiser, 2017 Bourbon Street Fundraiser, Monday the 29th from 3 to 7. This is in Marionette Park. 92 cents of every dollar raised goes directly to the costs incurred flying these men and women to and from our nation's capital. HonorFlightChicago.org. So is it a dinner, drinking, gambling, disco dancing kind of thing? What is this?
And it's on Sunday, October 29th.
Even better.
Even better than Monday.
Oh, I said Monday, didn't I? Good. Sunday the 29th. Okay.
And we've got the Sweet Reminder singing the tunes of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. We've got the Frankfurt Brass Band with great military and patriotic music. Wayne Messmer. From the World Series Cubs game is singing the national anthem, and lots of surprises. We've got the bagpipers, the Robin Baumgarten from WGN.
I'm glad to hear all of this.
Special guest, all sorts of great things going on.
All right, let's you and I touch bases one more time for the folks that aren't listening to us right now. We'll get you an even bigger crowd still. But in the meantime, HonorFlightChicago.org, HonorFlightChicago.org. Mary, good luck to you all.
Thank you so much, John. And could we also leave the phone number? It's 773-227-8387.
773-227-8387.
Thank you, John.
We'll be in touch, Mary. Ro's first and foremost story, Anna DeVlantis is in the studio, too, is going to be what? What are you guys kicking off big time today?
We've got Martha Raddatz is going to join us from ABC News. You know, she wrote that book, The Long Road Home, about the siege inside our city and how they've made it into a Nat Geo miniseries. So we'll be talking about that. We got a chance to see that.
Yeah, very powerful.
And it is it's very, very interesting. She'll be on the program at 4 o'clock. And the guy who did the story this week about how the president may not be the best negotiator when it comes to Congress. He's good in public, but not in Congress. Will join us to talk about
I could have written that book. I mean, really, when did you think embarrassing and humiliating and giving negative nicknames to all of these men and women all of these years, how was that going to help you? How is that the master negotiator at play? Maybe it is.
It must have worked in the development world or wherever he was.
Right.
But
maybe if you run down the people you're trying to do a deal with, then you get the upper hand, and then they kowtow to you afterwards.
You make more enemies, though.
You get more bees with honey or flies with honey.
Than you do
I'll
with
tell
vinegar.
You who's a loser, Jeff Snowflake.
He is a snowflake, actually. That's what he did, though. He melted. That's a problem.
Walked away.
Have a good show, you guys.
Thank you. Got to go pee.